This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. You send your child off to school each and every day. And with that act, you entrust the safety of your child to the people who run that school. Well, after Sandy Hook Elementary last December 14th, parents everywhere gave fresh thought to how safe their child's school really is. So when a new report revealed that Michigan is one of four states who do not require K through 12 schools to have emergency plans for multiple hazards, we wanted to find out more. That study from the group Save the Children also found more than half the states and the District of Columbia don't require schools or daycare centers to meet minimum standards to protect children during major emergencies. Are Michigan school children adequately protected? And what more can and should be done to keep the kids as safe as possible? Joining us is Jean-Aimé Desmarais, who's the Senior Director of U.S. Emergencies for Save the Children. And she joins us now from Washington. Welcome to the program, Jean-Aimé.
Thank you very much.
And we're joined by Kyle Garant, who's Director of School Support Services for the state of Michigan. And he joins us from Lansing. Good to have you with us, Kyle.
It's great to be here.
Jean-Aimé, I'd like to begin by getting an understanding for us. What criteria did you set for this study that Save the Children did on school hazard plans?
Well, this is the sixth year that Save the Children has put out a report card that looks at four very basic indicators of emergency preparedness. Three of them focus on child care, and one of them focuses on K-12 schools. So the requirement is that kindergarten through 12th grade schools in the state would be required to have a multi-hazard emergency plan in place. But the report card also looks at, as I said, three basic indicators for child care, and those include, do all regulated child care facilities in the state, both centers and group homes, do they require a written emergency plan, including a relocation plan? Does it include emergency reunification plan with the families? And then also, does their plan, the written emergency plan, include provisions for children with special needs or very young children who need assistance to evacuate?
So in order to get the data, did you study state mandates? You went state by state and the District of Columbia to see what was present?
Yes. Save the Children has a researcher who comes in and actually looks state by state at regulations and what is mandated through policy or procedures or law in that state. And right now, the state of Michigan is not meeting those basic indicators of emergency preparedness planning. And Michigan's not alone in that. There are right now four states meet none of the indicators, and that's the grouping that Michigan is in. Since the beginning, when we first released the report card in 2008, only four states met all four basic criteria for preparedness. We've now worked with states, and many more meet it, but 28 states still do not yet meet the requirements. And again, these are minimum standards for preparedness. These are not elaborate, reaching high goals. These are really the most basic things that child care facilities and schools need to have in place to help ensure the safety and protection of children.
Kyle Garant, your Director of School Support Services for our state. Should parents be concerned that not enough is being done by the state to keep kids safe?
Well, I think I think we can always do more. I will say, though, that in Michigan, while we don't have a mandate statutorily to collect a plan from a district, there are many, if not most, school districts in our state have an emergency response plan that deals with all hazard incidences, and they typically work with their county emergency manager as part of a more global plan that looks at a community, with the school being a vital part of that plan. So we know of school districts that have worked really hard and have trained really hard to ensure their students and staff are safe during the school year.
I'm wondering, should something like this be mandated on a state level, or is it better to allow the local districts to figure out what works best for them?
Well, there are many ways to achieve it. It doesn't have to be mandated through law. It can be also mandated and documented through procedural requirements. What is important, though, is that the state requires all schools to have a multi-hazard plan in place, and that's where Michigan falls short. There are many schools in Michigan who do have plans in place, but all of those plans may not be multi-hazard, which means that they may have good plans for one type of disaster, but they may not take into consideration all of the different types of disasters, or they may not include the level of collaboration with emergency management officials that really is needed to ensure effective planning. The other thing that we've seen across the country is very often communities who are affluent and who have a lot of resources have stronger plans in place, but it's often the communities with less resources that are not able to have as strong planning in place, and really it puts those children at risk. So Save the Children believes that it needs to be mandated at the state level that all schools have strong multi-hazard plans in place.
Kyle, do we see a fairly uniform sense of planning in place, or do we see, is it more patchwork throughout Michigan?
You know, I think you see a more uniform planning process now, that, you know, a process and kind of tool, you know, in terms of a product that comes out of that planning process. Jean-Aimé makes an excellent point about the need for collaboration and coordination with, you know, first responders and units of police and local emergency managers at the local level. And that can be achieved through a mandate, but it also can be achieved without a mandate. And, you know, with the lack of a mandate here in Michigan, we have great examples in communities across our state that have done the work and have formed relationships necessary to do the proper planning to ensure that kids are safe in school and that everybody plays their role and knows what their role is, no matter what the incident may be. We do have a mandate here in Michigan to conduct a certain number of emergency drills in our state, 6 fire drills, 2 tornado drills, and then 2 safety drills, one of which needs to be a shelter in place, so an active shooter type situation, and a school lockdown piece. And, you know, as a parent, you know, where my daughter goes to school at, she's had a couple instances where there was stuff that was going on outside of the school building that required the district to either evacuate kids because of a gas leak or because there was something going on in the community that required the school to be in lockdown. So, you know, while a mandate doesn't exist, we have great examples all over the state of districts that have a plan and that they practice that plan, because a mandate to have a plan in place and it sits on a shelf doesn't do anyone any good. So kind of our role here at the Department of Ed has been focused on trying to foster that collaboration with our partners at the Michigan State Police and the Department of Community Health at the state level and at the local level, and also help provide resources that local schools and community partners can use to help plan their process and to plan the document that they developed that's their school safety plan.
That was Kyle Garant speaking. He's Director of School Support Services for the state of Michigan, working for the Department of Education. We're also speaking with Jean-Aimé Desmarais, who's the Senior Director of U.S. Emergencies for the group Save the Children, which issued a report that found that Michigan's one of 4 states that does not require K-12 schools to have emergency plans for multiple hazards. Now, Kyle raised an interesting point, Jean-Aimé, that a mandate that sits on a shelf doesn't necessarily do what it's meant to do. How assured are you that the states with the mandates, that they're being followed and being executed?
To really ensure the protection of children in emergencies and disasters, it takes a community commitment. It's not just the schools and the child care program. Those, of course, that's where the children spend the majority of their days. So those are first line. But then it's also the families participating in that planning, the emergency management officials from the community being a part of it, surrounding, you know, businesses and other community members who are close by to schools also play a critical role in supporting that emergency plan, so that if a disaster or a tragedy happens in a community, really everyone in the community knows what actions to take to best protect and support children when that happens.
You know, when something like a Sandy Hook or a Columbine happens, there was so much national conversation, and amongst that, there was the observation made that if someone like an Adam Lanza comes in determined to do great harm, really, what could really be done to keep that harm from happening? Do we want to see kids living with that sense of armed guards, armed teachers, with mandated rules? Could they really make a difference?
I think one of the things that could make a tremendous difference is taking a really serious approach to addressing the mental health concerns that are in the communities. There is something, you know, that is not addressed and that is behind the violence. And so the actual weapons are only one piece of the consideration. It's really got to be an approach that addresses bullying in the schools, that addresses stigmatization of children or people who may have mental illnesses, and addresses support services for children to ensure that as they're growing up, they really are able to be supportive to achieve their full growth and potential, and to not really be, you know, cobbled by some of the challenges that exist in the world.
Kyle, as you look at what's in place at schools throughout Michigan, what's your sense with that question, that tension, if you will, between having a lot of safeguards in play and also an understanding of what can't really be controlled?
The mental health aspect is big, and you saw, you know, after the horrible events at Sandy Hook, Governor Snyder appointed a mental health commission to look at how we can retool our mental health system here in Michigan to work more on the preventative end of addressing needs that both adults and children have in our state around mental health needs. And also, as part of kind of that response, the governor called upon state agencies to develop a school safety work group that has been meeting over the last year to look at recommendations for how we can improve the safety of kids in schools and make recommendations, but also move forward on kind of policy initiatives that would better address the kind of climate and culture in schools to, again, work on the preventative end so you're not at a point where we're talking about teachers in the, you know, in schools with guns to protect kids, because as you kind of point out, once it gets to that point, all the planning and kind of process in the world that has gone into keeping that building safe, you know, more than likely somebody is going to be hurt in the time that it takes for, you know, law enforcement or others to respond to that type of a situation. So, you know, in this case, the best defense is a good offense, and working that on the mental health aspect is really key to the overall safety of schools and children and other environments in our state.
I saw some quotes from one of the parents who lost a six-year-old daughter at Sandy Hook, talking about parents need to be aware of safety measures. And his comment was that some of the easiest solutions are the least expensive. So, for example, at Sandy Hook, the teacher could only lock the classroom door with a key on the outside of the doorknob, not a door that locked from the inside. Should that type of thing be mandated? Can a parent feel confident that a school district is thinking down to the nuts and bolts like that, Kyle?
It's funny you mention that, because when school started this year at my daughter's school, she's a first grader now, and last year they didn't have electronic locks, and this year they do. And I know it was part of a bond passage that happened in our community. But, you know, I think schools are very cognizant of those tangible, maybe seemingly minor fixes that can have a great impact. So if you're doing the planning and the process right in terms of working with your partners at the local level, those are the types of things that are taken in consideration, and engaging parents in that conversation is very key, because they're the ones that are in the building every day. You know, I know myself, you know, some of the procedures that were in place before, you know, you're rushing around to get your son or daughter in the building in the morning, and you don't want to stop in the office and let them know who's in the building. And so, you know, the more we can work to kind of automate that safety and to put things like electronic locks and having one entry point into the building in schools, I think the better off everyone is.
Shadami Demaree, from what you've done and the work you've done with Save the Children, and you're the senior director of U.S. Emergencies, so you've seen what can play out. What's your main advice to parents who want to be involved and want to be aware?
Well, I think most parents in the U.S. just assume when they drop their children off, whether at childcare or at schools, that there's a plan in place. Parents have to ask, and parents should be active participants in that plan. Parents need to make sure that they give their updated emergency contact numbers, both their own cell phones, but also it's recommended an out-of-city or somebody right out of your local areas as a backup emergency contact in case the local phones are not working. Parents need to ask good questions and make sure that they understand, and then also that their children understand what the procedures and plans are when a disaster happens.
That was Jean-Ami Desmarais, who's with Save the Children. She joined us from Washington. And Kyle Garant, who's not only director of school support services for the state of Michigan, clearly the father of a first grader and is living it as an active, involved dad as well. And he joined us from Lansing. We want to thank both of you so much for speaking with us today on Stateside.
Thank you.
Thank you.